We come together again in this sacred space or this sacred time, and surely we arrive with many different points of view. But also we arrive with a common longing in our hearts to reach out to one another. We arrive with a common passion for justice and love to prevail, and for peace to prevail in our troubled world. As Betsy Binstock comes forward to light our chalice, I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting. We light our chalice for inner peace and for an end to war and violence and peace throughout the world. In today's service, many of the elements are there because of contributions from veterans and family members, and we're going to light a candle in remembrance of all and in honor of all our veterans. I note that, as Mike reminded me, it's 11-11 on the 11th month of the 11th day of the 11th month, which I believe was when the armistice was signed at the end of World War I. So it has a particular poignancy right at this moment.
Yeah. Today is Veterans Day, and we're celebrating it tomorrow as well. Now, I'm wondering, what is a veteran? Does anyone know what a veteran is? What do you think? The person that went to war and came back alive is one type of veteran. Anyone else know a further description of veteran? I'm going to come over here. Quincy, was that your hand up? Do you mind using a mic?
I'm not sure if he said this, but if he didn't say this, then a person who fought in Vietnam
would be a veteran. A veteran is not just someone who has fought in a war. It's someone who's been part of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines. So it's someone who's given their time to help our country. I want to know, how many people here were either a veteran themselves or have someone in their family who has been a veteran or is a veteran? Why don't you stand up if you're able? That is a lot of people. Look at that. All right, why don't you have a seat now? And I wear a T-shirt specifically because I liked the message. Tom this morning referred to me as the DRE billboard. But my shirt says, "Peace begins with understanding." And I really, really like this slogan. And it has many different layers and many different places in the world. But in particular, there are a lot of people, which I didn't realize this, that thought that if they were a veteran, they shouldn't say that in a UU church. Because there's so many people in UU churches that hate war. I hate war, too. I absolutely detest war. But why would a veteran, why would someone go and join the Army or the Navy, do you think, if they hate war? Why do you think they do that?
For their country. To keep it safe.
People go to keep countries safe?
So that way the war just ends faster.
War ends faster. Anybody else have another opinion? Adults can give opinions, too. One of the things that one of the kids said in the first service, which was just the perfect answer, was to keep peace. And that is the main reason. I think if you were to really ask anyone who served in the armed forces, and why do you do this, is because they really want peace. And one of the little boys in the first service, and he is little, he's only in second grade, said, it's kind of weird that the reason that you go to keep peace is to fight people to keep peace. And it is. It's a weird thing that we're forced sometimes to do that, but the people that give of their time to be a veteran and to leave their families and not always go fight wars, but just try and keep places safe, really all have one motivation, and that is to just keep the peace. And I think that we as Unitarian Universalists should never categorically say all veterans are terrible because they fought in a war, because their mission probably was to keep peace, and that if we put ourselves always in someone else's shoes, and remember that peace begins with understanding, we have to remember why veterans did what they did. And clearly many of our families have thought that same way, because we all have people that we know that are veterans. So as you enjoy the day off tomorrow, also try and remember the people that did give of their time, some of their lives, to help protect us as well as lots of other people in the world. Thank you.
My name is Francis Tolliver. I come from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, Germany to hear, I fought for king and country I loved dear. 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas song was sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day, their brave and glorious lads so far away. I was lying with my messmate on the cold and rocky ground when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. He's singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent as the gas clouds rolled no more, as Christmas brought us respite from the war. As soon as they were finished and a reverent pause was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen, struck up some lads from Ghent. Oh, the next they sang was Stille Nacht, 'tis Silent Night, says I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the front sentry we cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag, like a Christmas star, shone on the plain so bright, as he bravely strolled unarmed into the night. Then one by one on either side walked into no man's land. With neither gun nor bayonet we met there hand to hand. We shared some secret brandy, and we wished each other well, and in a flare-lit soccer game we gave 'em hell. We traded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home. These sons and fathers far away from families of their own. Young Sanders played the squeeze box, and they had a violin. This curious and unlikely band of men. Soon daylight stole upon us, and France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that lived that wondrous night. Whose family have I fixed within my sights? 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. Frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they kept between us to exact the work of war had crumbled and were gone forevermore. My name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas comes since World War I, I've learned the lessons well. For the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame. And on each end of the rifle we're the same.
I've never delivered a Veterans Day sermon before. I've included prayers for veterans in worship and conducted memorial services for veterans, but to focus our service on our veterans never felt quite right. I think many of us, particularly those of us of the Vietnam era and younger, have very conflicted feelings about the war, the wars in which our country has been engaged. And I think those feelings color our perception of those who serve in the military. I remember as a high school student reading the Gettysburg Address in front of the Civil War Monument in my hometown, and then seeing veterans, mostly World War II and Korea, come parading by. I remember being told stories of sacrifices that uncles and great uncles who served in the great wars, World War I and World War II, made, and how they did not come home. On the other hand, my father and his brothers had served in the military, but there was never much talk of it. They did not march in parades or keep souvenirs of their military service. There was something there that was not discussed. Back then, I had a vague sense that we owed a debt of gratitude to those women and men who served in these wars, but I cannot say that at this point in my life I had anything close to a real understanding of this holiday. In high school, I remember having to register for the draft. I also remember all the Vietnam protests happening at the same time. But I did register for the draft, got my draft card, and as I was on my way to college, got the standard student deferment. Then I got to college and the system changed. There was now a lottery. I remember being in the common room of my dorm on the evening of March 8, 1973. Usually it was a rather rowdy place, music blaring and people partying where you went after you were done studying. But tonight, it was so quiet. The television was on, and there was a real sense of anxiety in the room. We were watching the military draft lottery drawings of birthdays to determine who would be called to military service. Dignitaries would reach into a big glass jar that contained these capsules with slips of paper in them and pick one out at a time. With each capsule open, there was a sense of terror that it would contain your birthday. I don't remember exactly, but we made it through 10 or 20 people before we hit anyone's birthday in the room. I can't now even see in my mind who was the first. I think it may have been someone other than those whom I lived with in the dorm, someone who just came in because we had a television and needed to watch this. But I remember the horrible sinking feeling that this person was going to Vietnam next year. And I have to say that I thought of it as almost like a death sentence. It was painful to keep listening. You knew, at least it was popularly said, that you had to get higher than 90 or 100 to be sure you weren't going to be going, being called up. And each number read, that was not your birthday, felt both like a reprieve and also an increase in the likelihood that your number was next. Would I serve proudly, do my duty? Would my little heart murmur keep me out of the service as my doctor suggested it might? Would I protest the war, go to Canada, go to jail? All these things kept rushing through my head, knowing my birthday was still in the jar and could be drawn at any time. It did finally come, but I was very lucky. My birthday number was 236, well beyond the dates of those who might be called to serve. The anxiety was over. I did not have to, and I did not choose to serve in the military. I felt horrible for those few with low numbers. I didn't know what to say to them. You know, you'll be fine. You probably won't get killed. But time passed, and somehow college went on, and I lost track of those with the low numbers. I don't really know what happened. I presume that at least some of them went into the military. It was still 3 years before Saigon fell and the war ended. But on those nights back then, when I watched the news and they announced the numbers killed in the war that day, I thought, but for a bit of luck, it could have been me. Well, I've not served in the military, but there are many from this church who have. You'll find their names of those who served in World War I and World War II hanging on plaques on our walls. Many who are sitting in our pews this morning are veterans. And they're feeling about their military service to this country very greatly. Some, especially our older veterans, take great pride in their service of protecting our nation and its freedoms. Others look back on their war experience as a tragic loss of lives without sufficient justification. Each week, members of this church stand out in front of the building holding up signs for peace and an end to war on Thursday afternoons. And you know what? Sometimes among those standing there, there are veterans. A few among us have deep scars of war that have yet to and may never heal. Some of us have children serving in the military and balance pride with worry all the time. One of our members wrote that it was an honor to give 9 years of his life serving to preserve the right for everyone to speak their mind freely, even when he deplored what they were saying. I'm sure that many who come back from war deplore what people who have not been there are saying. After Vietnam, when the men and women returned, they were not greeted with great parades and thanks, but with protests and even disgust. It was a huge added pressure for many who were trying to assimilate back into a society that was simply not accepting them. As a denomination that was proudly on record against the war, we did little to honor our UU veterans of this war. You know, today there are hundreds of Unitarian Universalists serving in the military. There are Unitarian Universalist chaplains in all branches of the armed forces. And on some military bases now, there are regular Unitarian Universalist services conducted. But as a whole, I don't think we have been a very, very welcoming to the returning vets, and I don't think we have been a place of understanding and compassion for those military men and women and their families. In truth, most of our veterans, and we have many in our church, stay pretty quiet about their military service. At least in part, probably because they believe it will not be all that well received by some others. Last spring, some of you were there, I was preaching for the installation of Walter LaFleur as the minister of our church in Poughkeepsie. And while I was there, I met the Reverend Chris Antel, a Unitarian Universalist minister and Army chaplain, who had been the intern minister at this particular church. He was part of the service, but he later spoke to me of how there was resistance by some in the church at having an intern who was among their midst but preparing for the military, and how for others it had been an opportunity to have a conversation that they had not felt they could have in their Unitarian Universalist congregations before. Chris tells a powerful, true story about how we have treated our veterans and their families and the silent scars that still exist. Recently, the Unitarian Universalist Association published a resource book entitled Bless All Who Serve. You can buy a copy, but our publishing house chose to give away copies to those presently in the military, veterans, and their families. And Chris, in his position, was given a large quantity to distribute to these folks. He gave them out on military bases and to veterans and their families in the congregations where he would preach. And one day he took a bunch of the books to a chapter meeting of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association in his area. He told the ministers that they could buy a copy from the bookstore for their bookshelves, but he had copies to give away to service women and men, veterans and military families. He asked if there were ministers who needed them for military folks or veterans in their congregation. One retired woman, Unitarian Universalist minister, came up to him and said, "There's a woman in the congregation where I am that is dealing with the loss of a family member in the military, and I would like one for her. And as the books have a place to inscribe a few words in the front, Chris asked for the person's name, and the woman paused. And then she said, "Put my name there." Well, Chris was a bit confused because he had just told the ministers they couldn't just, he couldn't just give them away for general reference. But then she went on to say, "My brother was an Air Force bomber in Vietnam, and he died there." So Chris said, "Oh, of course, you are a military family member, and I would very much like to give you this book. What is your brother's name?" Chris asked. And she said, "Philip." So Chris inscribed the book in honor of Philip. And then he said to her, "What happened?" Tears ran down her cheeks. She said, "We," meaning her family, "are sixth generation Unitarians. My brother and I went to Quaker schools. When he went to Vietnam, my family became very vocal pacifists. My brother didn't think he could come home to us, so he killed himself in Vietnam." There are many veterans or veteran family members who bite their tongues and don't feel they can tell their stories in our congregation. This book, Bless All Who Serve, is a message from our denomination saying we don't sit in judgment and we do care and you can come home to us. You know, how we treat our veterans is so tied to the topic of war, the war in which they fought, or war in general, it can be very hard to separate our feelings about them. Whether war is ever justified, and if so, under what circumstances and for what reasons, is an endless theological and philosophical debate. I've preached on it before, and I probably will again. It is an important moral question. But today is not about our attitudes towards a particular war or war in general. The holiday we observe, originally established as Armistice Day in 1926 and renamed Veterans Day in 1954, is to honor the service of all men and women who are veterans. And honoring our veterans does not mean supporting a particular war or even supporting the use of military force in general. Honoring our veterans is about compassion, respect, acceptance, and even responsibility. Those who did not serve need to acknowledge that it was often because of our privileged position that we had the luxury not to serve. Yes, today, unlike when I was a young man, we don't have a draft or a lottery. We have the all-volunteer army. Sounds good. And yes, some affluent folks devote their lives to military service. But by and large, there still is a selection process as to who will go to war and who will not. And the determination is often governed by money. In this country, it is largely the poor and low income who serve in the military. Not because they're more pro-war, but because it's a way, particularly in these tough economic times, to earn a living, to get off the streets of the inner city, even to go to college, which would have been unlikely, if not impossible, for many of them without military service. I certainly have a sense of, but for the grace of God, there go I. And you know, as for those who served, I think General MacArthur was wrong. Old soldiers don't just fade away. They and their families so often continue to feel the after effects of war. Yes, many paid the ultimate price. More than 58,000 died in Vietnam, 4,487 in Iraq, over 2,000 to date in Afghanistan. The families of these men and women still have extraordinary needs. But these needs pale when compared to the needs of the seriously injured and those with serious mental health issues brought on by war. The true cost of the wars we have been fighting are really not measured in terms of the billions and billions of dollars spent, and not even in the cost of lives lost, but in the cost that will continue to mount for decades in the lives of veterans and their families. You know, the good news of recent time is that because of the hugely improved techniques of battlefield medicine, men and women who would have otherwise died live today. But many of them live with serious disabilities and need extraordinary care and rehabilitation, some for their entire life. There are many who will not be able to reintegrate as productive members of our society again. As of 2010, which were the most recent statistics I could come across, we have an unbelievable 3.4 million disabled veterans, and nearly 700,000 of them are more than 70% disabled. But it's not just the physically injured veterans that we need to honor this day. We have to own all our veterans. It's easy to look the other way, you know, to say, not my war, I didn't support it, I didn't vote for those politicians who sent these men and women off to battle, let them deal with it. It might be easy, but it would also be wrong. We're part of this nation, liberal or conservative, it is our war. We need to connect with all our veterans at the level of compassion and hope. Hope for their lives, and hope for a world where their kind of service will no longer be necessary. We have much to learn from those who have been to war, from the young dead soldier we read about, and from those generals who so often counsel our political leaders against military action unless it's absolutely necessary. Please don't be dismissive of what these people who have seen the suffering of war firsthand have to say. And please, don't look the other way. In the mission statement of this church, we say we welcome all. But you know, a few years ago, when we had a military family in our congregation, I could see it was difficult for some to be fully welcome. I know some who have served in the military feel reluctant to share their experiences in our church for fear of being judged. We must honor our veterans by welcoming their experiences into our community, not debating their motives, but by meeting their needs. Their service often came at a great personal sacrifice, and we need to honor that regardless of how we feel of their mission. Many are left with deep scars, and we need to engage with them with real compassion. But surely, the very best way to honor the service of veterans is to work towards a world where someday there will be no more veterans. They say that every veteran's prayer is a prayer for peace. War will not bring peace. World War I was called the war to end all wars, and look where we've been since. Gestures of peace bring more peace. It's laying down the weapons and coming out of the trenches and seeing the humanity of our enemy that can lead to peace. I don't blame soldiers for war. I blame us for failing to live peace, for failing to have respect and compassion across differences, for failing to engage with words and acts of kindness, for failing to use our best skills of persuasion in conflict situations. It's time, actually, as you suggested, Virginia, to study and learn ways of peace, not war. That should be our Veterans Day pledge. And our prayers and efforts must be for peace, so that someday we will no longer have veterans scarred by the horrors of war.
Thank you. Thank you.